You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
What's up, everybody? New episode, new guest, Marcus Samuelson. So good to have you with us.
I am so excited to be here. Like, I love two things beside my family. I love cooking, of course, and then I love football, soccer. Like, every weekend when my wife asks me, let's have a good weekend. I was like, it's Friday, I don't even know yet. You know, it's all based on Arsenal, so I don't know.
Based around the fixes, based around the games.
Yes.
So you're a celebrity chef, you own a number of restaurants, right? You've got, what have you got? Vegas, New York, Miami, Atlanta,
wherever you want to go,
Bahamas,
travel, we got you.
Montreal.
Yeah.
You're living good.
Yep, things are good. I'm very, very appreciative for, you know, coming here as an immigrant and coming here with no money and being able to build a team and to be able to grow and build some restaurant and have some fun.
What particular genre of restaurants or what are you covering?
Delicious restaurants where you want to come back to.
Okay.
And we want to celebrate and feel good. You know, we started with Red Rooster in Harlem. That's now going on 12 years. We have a beautiful restaurant on the west side in Manhattan called Hav Mar and a gorgeous brand new restaurant downtown called Metropolis, which is stunning. So I'm very, very excited about that.
You know when you're with people and you're sharing a dinner or something and you watch somebody eat and they kind of like, there are those people that inhale that food, right? Do you judge those kind of people when they're eating? Does it feel like they don't really appreciate the fine arts?
I give love to them because it means that they are excited to be here. As a chef, nothing makes you happier than see like,
Plate clean.
You can get into it. You
well,
just like
plates
soccer.
Clean in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, but don't you want people to
fans?
But don't you want people to savor the food? Like actually, because these two eat as if they're racing.
Sure.
No, Clint's not so bad.
Yeah, he is.
Clint's
they're in competition.
I honestly push him to be a little bit faster than I think he normally is. But you know, for me, I grew up African father, and you have to
eat. Nigerian? What about
Gambian?
Gambia.
And everything on the plate had to be finished. So that's one.
Yep.
Two, if I wanted to go outside, I wanted to play, I wanted to do anything, I had to finish my food. So I got into a habit of just finishing all of my food as quick as I could so I could go back out.
And you guys have, I mean, Gambia, Senegal, you guys actually, it's one of the biggest dishes from Africa come from your father's country. Jollof rice, which all of West Africa claims, but it actually come from Senegambia when they were one country. And it's
basically... Mo was about to claim it for Nigeria.
Yeah, Nigeria's always.
We got the best one. It's known.
It's always Ghana or Nigeria,
but
right?
It's kind of like, imagine a big paella.
Yeah.
But it also has some really good, more root vegetables and it's heartier. But that comes from that whole region. So your background is Nigerian?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. What tribe?
Well, my mom, she's from, you won't even know the names.
I've been to Nigeria. Don't edit what I know.
Come on. Hey, man, come on.
Yeah, okay.
Put some respect on his name. Ibibio?
Huh?
Ibibio.
No, I don't.
See? It's like
Ibo, I do know. Ibo.
Yeah, that's one that everyone knows. Yeah. But it's like the area is called Cross River Strait.
Wow.
Have you been
so
there?
You have then Egusi. You know about Egusi, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And Nigeria has really a lot of good, you know, the peanuts on top of the street food in Nigeria is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Have you spent a lot of time in Africa?
Yes.
Okay.
I travel all over Africa for cooking, all over.
I know that sounds dumb, but so you were born in Ethiopia, but you actually only spent, was it the first 2 years of your life there, is that right?
Yeah, and then I came back to shoot and cook and travel.
So you've only ever been back, as an adult? Is that more so the case?
Yes, which, you know, me and my sister, we got adopted together. I was born in Hutt. Ethiopia, a couple of hours outside the capital. And I was just so busy working, so I don't think I was really ready to see that side of myself. I was like busy working, grinding. My sister just texted me, we need to go back. And I was like 24, 25 when that happened. I was like, I don't have time. She's like, no, we need to go back. And she's been digging for a long time, and she found out that our biological father was alive. Mm. And she's like, he's getting older, and this is the time, this is our chance to see him. So that was when I went back to Ethiopia with her, met my biological father, didn't know I had 8 half-sisters and brothers. And I saw the hut. I saw the hut when I was born, and it was incredible.
Were you a little frightened, like, to go back? Like, it's not so much that you were busy, but it's dealing with the unknown.
Yeah, no, it was all of that. And that hut, I mean, I still go back, and it's like, it gives me strength, because I know when we go through rough times here and we complain about, oh, my sneaker's not right, or whatever small thing we're complaining about, right? You measure that against coming from that hut, surviving. Obviously, I was very fortunate and lucky. Our mom, we had tuberculosis. Our mom walked us from the village into the capital, not only walked us in there, found a hospital.
You and your sister both
had
tuberculosis.
And my mom, she passed away. And then again, this is where we got lucky, right? Like the nurse at the hospital, when we were cured, she just said, these two kids, I'm not putting them back on the street. I'm gonna take them in. So she broke the law, she just took us.
Wow.
Fed us, loved on us, set us up for adoption. And that's how I went from Castahunsi guy to Marcus Sampson. And I went from coming from the warmest country in the world to the coldest country in the world, you know?
You're not lying there.
Yeah, no, but you guys know, it's our journeys. Everyone sits on, you have an amazing journey. We all have stories, you know,
so
journeys.
So when you went back, did you feel disconnected from that part of yourself, like that, from your Ethiopian culture? Because you left it too.
No.
You must have been surrounded by a Swedish family though, right? Rather than by your Ethiopian culture.
To be honest, you know this. The blessing about being black is that you get reminded of your shit every day from people, not always in the nicest way, especially growing up. So you always connected. Mm. If you feel good about your day, trust me, there is a Johan that's putting your shit down. You know what I mean? But that's just how, I wasn't upset about that. It was just, it gives you grit. It gives me, you know, you come from a rough background, and that's your narrative, and this has helped you on the field, right? So it's not about complaining where you're from. This is my journey. This was my path. And I don't think I would have been, I know I couldn't have been as successful, and where my drive comes from that time.
You think you'd have been the football fan that you are had you grown up in Ethiopia?
Even more.
Oh, really?
Even more. Arsenal is all the way in Ethiopia. Africa.
I'm so sick of Arsenal. Why is there so much
Arsenal?
What
are you mad about? Let us enjoy Arsenal.
Shouldn't you be a Malmo fan? Shouldn't that be your team?
Absolutely not. I grew up in Gotham. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay. Hey,
Malmo.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Over there. Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You didn't pick up any Swedish sports like handball when you were.
How many Ethiopian handball players? Like I tried that stuff, that just crushed me. Do you know what handball is?
I've seen it. It's basically yeah.
Yeah.
Where they run and jump.
Throw the ball in the goal.
You would be really good at it, but it's not.
Why? Because he's aggressive.
Yeah.
Why y'all do me like that?
But it's a fun sport.
How many steps can you take?
Huh?
Can you take
three, right?
I think so.
Bounce, and then, you shoot. Yeah.
Did you play?
Well, Hammarby had a good handball team, so I got to go watch them a bunch in Stockholm.
But did you play?
For fun, with the guys.
Yeah.
And how were you?
I was okay.
You can play on the wing. Because those guys are...
The guys that are tall, and they have, like, all this force. They can jump and just whip it. It wasn't for me.
Did you play football then?
Soccer?
Yes.
Of course.
You did.
Soccer, I mean, the whole thing for me has been soccer. I've really only tried 2 things in my life, cooking and soccer. So I always
Which
say...
Which were you better at?
In my gut, I'm a better soccer player, but in reality, I'm a better chef, okay. Right? And, you know, I coach everything. The way I lead my crew, the way I lead my team is everything from I'm still that soccer player. You know, there's so many realities between, so many similarities between being in the kitchen and being in the locker room, like in the team, the soccer team, you listen to coach, you have your team, it's you against whoever you battling with. Cooking is the same thing. You stick together, you listen to chef, it's humbling, it's rewarding. By the end of the night, you celebrate together. It's very much, and I would say on the negative side, the day I got cut, I'll never forget it. It's the only time in my life where I actually had a personal crisis because I didn't know where to go.
So got cut. What kind of level are we talking at this point?
No, I played with guys. We traveled. We played.
You said you were a midfielder. What kind of midfielder were you? Describe how you were.
Central midfield. I gotta get
box
the
ball. To box.
Box to box. Gotta get the ball. I mean, like I said, Scholes was like one of the guys that I always looked up to and really study how he moved and all that stuff.
So you played on the first team at Geis?
Not at the B second. I was going up to A and then got cut.
Okay.
And, you know, we had the biggest youth tournament in the world, Gothia Cup.
Yeah.
Played in that. Went to Dallas Cup, which I'm sure you guys have played it, right? Yeah. Played at that, met Pelé there, you know, like big things. Playing against, you know, the Brazilian, all the teams that you play against. Yep. So for me, soccer was my path, right? It was my friends, it was everything. So when you get cut, that loss...
You don't know where you're going next.
I didn't go to school. I was staying in my room. My parents were like, you got to come out of your room. I couldn't get out of my room. I just didn't know how to deal. I felt embarrassed going back to school. I had no clue what to do.
Had you believed that was your future?
The only thing I was interested in.
What age were you?
16.
Okay.
So that was like real depression for you at that time.
Yeah, I think I played until I was 17, something like that. It was really rough. And then I got a chance actually to leave, to go to Japan and kind of try out cooking with the family. And I thought it was so good just to leave, to get out, because I didn't have to deal with my friends. Right. I didn't have to deal with people asking me.
So where did that passion come from for cooking? Was that... When you went back to Ethiopia, did you see that everybody loved to cook, or is it more Sweden?
It was my Swedish grandmother, and at that point I started to have like weekend jobs, and they were all in restaurants. And the same energy I had on the field, I could actually take out in the kitchen. And I became really good at it. I didn't know I was good at it. I was just like doing what people told me to do. But it's the same thing. It's work ethic. You show up. You work harder than the person next to you. So those things were easy for me. That was like soccer. Okay, you got to work out twice a day. Okay, no problem. You got to be better than this guy. No problem. You know, it's like the same thing that you guys did, right? Like, you got to out-hustle people.
You didn't know you were good at it? At what point did you know you were good at it?
Once I came back from Japan and I got a scholarship to go to Switzerland, now I was like 18, cooking, and I had to do it not speaking good German, not speaking good French. But I knew I could like multitask, right? I could now work in Europe, not just in my hometown in some sloppy cafe. I was at this incredible place, having 2-3 languages going through my head and still hanging, right?
Beyond the passion for both cooking and football, you like the competitive nature of it, right?
Yeah, you have to be number one.
So were you like, what was your personality like on the field, and did that carry on to cooking as well? Like, are you in the, like talking shit back and forth with people, or like, what was that like for
you? You're like a Gordon Ramsay.
Not always, but most of the time, the captains. You have to be organized and structured and bring everybody with you. You can't get involved with everything because at the end of the day, you got to win.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing being a chef. Stuff is happening constantly, and you just got, end of the day, we got to get through this. We got to get the food out at a certain level. I got to speak to customers. We got to work with purveyors. This staff person is not working with that staff person. There's 50 things going on, right? Yeah. And you got to kind of stay in the middle and not overreact to any of this stuff. And you have to do it at the highest level. And you have to, so I still work out almost every day the same way I worked out when I was a soccer player, right? Okay. So you just have to stay disciplined.
Why
want
is that
it more than
to
the
you?
Person next to you. You know what I mean?
Why is that important to you, to work out like that?
Well, first of all, cooking is supposed to craft, but it also takes a lot out of your body. And so in order for me, this is a long career, right? Soccer player, maybe it's for 12, 14, 15 years. Cooking is all your life. So if you're gonna do it at the highest level, you have to take care of your body. Cooking is not a normal profession, right? There's alcohol available at your job every day, right? That's just not a normal profession, right? So I've seen a lot of my really good friends not be here anymore or not operating at the level that they should, because there's been drugs and alcohol involved. So I'm like, if you're gonna do this, and again, this is where I have to say blackness is such an advantage, because you know you're not gonna get a lot of shots. If you get your shot, step up and do it. It gives, for me, it gives me focus. No excuses and focus. That's really what it does.
Do you feel like you're judged differently as a black chef?
Well, I felt I was judged differently as a black player. Because just how we receive the ball, how we move with the ball is just different. It just is. You know, how you,
right,
rhythmically, how you see the game and how you play the game. So dealing with that, with coaches that didn't understand you were doing, they were like, back then, was like, kick the ball a lot to the forward. And you're like, you want to, you know, you want to move.
How many other black players were at Geis with you while you were
oh
there?
Oh, my God. It was...
like you could count on one hand?
Yeah. I remember one day there was a Colombian kid coming in. That was a big deal. The players that played like us was the Slavic guys from former Yugoslavia, for Bosnian kids, Croatian kids, because then, you know, there was one, it was Yugoslavia, it was one. So a lot of those people came to Sweden to work for Volvo. So their kids, they were the ones with kind of like the, you know, the moves and
right,
playing. And then we had some Chilean kids too, some South Americans. And they also had, you know, yeah, you played in Stockholm, you know yeah, what it looked like.
And typically those groups would, like, there's a group of Eritreans that yeah, always were together, Gambians.
Yeah.
And the immigrants that came, they all kind of stuck together
yeah,
and formed one like happy family in Sweden yeah, versus kind of the rest of the population. Yeah. But Geis was one of my favorite clubs just
yeah,
because.
Yeah, how many times did you score?
Why is it free problem clubs, man? Tell us, every time. Yeah. Please tell us, Charlie.
I scored my first time, professional nice, league goals against Geis, and I had my first hat trick.
First hat trick too, man.
Yeah. They yep, put a statue yep, for him over there.
Outside the club, downtown Stockholm, there's a statue of Charlie, absolutely.
I believe that part.
Yeah. Outside the club, you know.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You brought up NYCFC. I know Claudio Reyna was there. You guys are good friends, right?
Yeah.
How did you guys come to meet each other? Like, how did that come about?
I meet everybody through the restaurant.
Okay.
And, you know, just knowing...
Just him coming into your restaurant.
Yeah, I think I met Claudio that way. The 95% of people I meet through the restaurant or out and about. And being a big soccer fan, of course, I remember their run. And I loved watching him play. Yeah. I mean, he being Argentinian. And rooting for Gio, for example, I remember when he got signed to Dortmund and texting Claudio back and forth. And Claudio, you know, when it was NYC, but of course...
Do you remember when he didn't get played at the World Cup? No, I'm just interested. No. I'm interested.
Keep stirring the pot.
You must have been, no, but you must have been watching that, thinking, yes, man, what's happening?
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think now they have such a shot, because right now those young fellas are playing in teams that they're actually playing, like versus playing. I thought you were really smart going to Fulham. You played versus playing at a bigger level and maybe not play as much, right? So now they're playing. It's great to see that. Pulisic is playing. It's amazing to see that Juve have two Americans. Like, it's, and they're playing, because otherwise it doesn't matter their name. If they're not playing, they're not playing.
You're not going to develop.
Yeah.
When you look at that team, right? Because you've cooked for an esteemed list of player of people, not even just players, who's the one like that you look at that team, you're like, you know what, if I had a chance to cook for this person, I'd wanna
Wait, which team?
US team, US national team. Is there a player that you're like, you know what, I'd wanna, he'd be on my list of someone I wanna cook for?
If they go to the semifinal, I cook for the whole team with joy. But if they go, if they're not going to the second round, I'm mad at all of them because they have the, they, I mean, of course, it's got a lot of luck how you, you know, but they, you guys know, they have a shot. They really have a shot.
For sure.
If they get
home
lucky.
Soil, and they got the Copa America this summer to kind of get like a dry run of what it's like having a major tournament on a home soil that all your best players are in.
Also generational, those guys are going to all be 26, 27 at that point, which is also rare, right?
With the experience of playing in a World Cup already, as opposed to last World Cup, where there's 90% was their first World Cup.
So. To build off of what he asked, if you could make a best 11 of players you'd like to cook for that you haven't, who would be on that list?
Oh, my God. I mean,
I thought you were going to say a best 11 of people you have cooked for.
You know, you
probably might.
Yeah, do that.
All right.
Do who you want to cook for.
Who you cook for.
Oprah's right there. Yeah. Oprah's right there, of course. Obama.
Hey, know, man, keep
and Michelle, and Michelle, of course.
Okay.
Clinton is most, one of the most fun. And a bunch of you know, Madonna, like a bunch of.
Pele. Oh, wow.
Pele. I didn't cook for Pele. I was just a kid.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I did cook for Pele. He came back, actually.
See?
In the did. He came back.
Someone read their notes.
Yes. You're right, Pele. You know, I gotta say, Harry Belafonte, because he did so much for the movement of Africa, and it was, my mom never cared about celebrities. She's like, just call me once you meet Harry Belafonte. He's such a handsome man. I'm like, I'm 26, I'm not gonna tell him like, he's handsome, but like, I took a picture and sent it to my mom.
Do you get nervous cooking for people of that stature?
No, the logistics makes me nervous, because it's all about safety. Right, when you have a president in your building, or you have, you know, like it's all about the logistic. How do we get them into the location? How do we get them out? How do we make sure the staff is not taking pictures?
Do you close the restaurant down for people?
Yeah, or we go to places where we have to go to, and it's all about logistic, because the food, I know I got the food. Like that's not, like, it's like.
You're never worried about that.
Or you're nervous when you shoot a penalty, then you shouldn't take the penalty. Like it's like, you're not, you know what I mean?
How do you decide what to make for them?
Talk to their person, like.
So it's based on what they like?
Well, it's also based on allergies.
Okay.
Other than a diet. Why they're trying. So when I got the opportunity to do Barack Obama's first state dinner, you know, they were new in the White House. Michelle Obama's just built her big garden. The state dinner was for this prime minister out of India. So for me, it was like, okay, she's trying to have a conversation about healthier cooking. Let's do a majority vegetarian meal. You know, that he was vegetarian, not Obama, but Prime Minister Singh. So you always want to make it so the person you're cooking for is comfortable, right? Like if you come, you know, I would think about how do we throw some egusi, how do we make, you know, how do we do a nod to your culture?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? If Clint would come, maybe it would be a little bit around barbecue or something. You want the person in center to be comfortable. I'm hosting right now.
Mm.
And that's not the moment to go on this sort of esoteric route.
Right.
You know what
Speaking
I mean?
Of all the food, am I right in thinking that you brought something with you?
I brought a little something.
You
did?
What'd you bring us?
Just a little chicken and waffles from our store down the street.
Hey, yeah. Some chicken and waffles.
Yes.
So this is from your Harlem spot?
No, this is from our Newark spot. We got a store like 20 minutes away from
here. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
What's up, how are you?
All right.
Oh, this is fancy chicken and waffles.
Yeah.
Wait, you're not eating?
Isaiah, I see you. I have no lunch. What was missing?
I got the
grand
finale.
Thank you. Okay, great. Well, you guys, one of the things that I always thought about in terms of soccer players is, you know, when Ronaldo came to Man U, he brought in a chef. He changed kind of the game how people would think
Who did,
about
sorry?
Food. Ronaldo did.
Right.
You know, I think in Tottenham there was a Spanish Coke that pulled all the white bread, for example, and just changed how you guys would eat.
Who was that?
I was only there for a year, so. But the thing that they did was, they also would do like blood work, and then whatever you're missing, in terms of like protein shakes or the shakes that you had after training, everybody was different. And then, like you said, meal prep.
Yeah.
When you go to lunch, about portion size and what each player should kind of have.
Yeah.
what you're missing in your diet from your blood work and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you have no's? Is white bread like a no for you?
No, but with each person, you'd really got to know where they are, right? Uh-huh. And so obviously, if you can get a better grain, you do that. You know what I mean? I don't think if I would be top athlete, there's no way I would eat that.
Oh,
because
really?
It's just you can't at that moment.
It's good, huh?
I know me some chicken
really
and waffles.
Really good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
My first 6 months at Hammerby, I didn't know how to cook. Still don't know how to cook.
Yeah.
So you had the form. So you had the Foreman grill.
Thank you.
No. So.
Okay. Now.
Oh wow.
You got the
damn.
Big plate.
You got the Eiffel Tower. Damn. You got the Statue of Liberty, bro.
As a young American
no,
kid.
No. I will never eat that much.
No,
give it to one of them. Charlie's your man.
No.
And it was split. Come on.
No.
You can't give me the biggest one.
You got it. I would go
to fast food.
Did I?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I would eat fast food.
Yeah. Wow, no.
Yeah.
You don't have to, sweetheart.
Kebab, fries.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, my God.
You know, the easy food. And 6 months in, the fans called the coach and said I was always eating at this spot. And
no.
They told on you.
Yeah. But in the end, it
benefited me. Were you in shape, though?
Yeah, I was still in shape, but they just said I wasn't scoring goals.
Yeah.
And so
you're
looking at different results and reasons why I'm not doing that. And so the coach called me in, Tony Gustafson. He said, all right, you gotta stop eating junk food.
Well, so what did you do? Did you learn to cook?
No, the chef at the club would make me lunch and dinners to bring home.
Mm-hmm. Who eats slow?
I'm talking.
One nothing.
Get out of here.
One nothing.
That don't count.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Can I say, I'm disappointed at myself right now.
What?
I was so excited to come here. The first thing that I wanted to do was, I just wanted to say, I looked forward to this moment, right? And then I come here and you ask about food, you ask about Ethiopia, and I go soft. And going soft is not me. I want to come back and it's like, my favorite soccer comment, I would say, all time. It's Clint.
Oh, I know it. What it is.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. So I just want to know, where were you? Why did you say it? And what was going on in your head? You know, you don't know
what
where
you
I'm
said
from,
to Mike.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
I'm like, where are you? What statement? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, we just doing the Champions League coverage the other day. It kind of brought back the memories. But home game at the Cottage, first Man City, Micah Richards.
Yeah.
There have been a few challenges that we've gone into, and then that was just kind of one that kind of went over the edge a little bit, and then, I don't know, man, that was just, that was the kind of thing I always kind of reverted back to was like, you don't know where I'm from, you don't know what I've been through.
Yeah.
Like, when I listen to music, I listen to a lot of Texas rap,
but
we talked earlier about Bun B. And, listen to the rap of where I came from and the struggle that I went through. So, when I got into, altercations, it's like, man, you don't know what I've been through.
You don't know
what the struggle was, so it's kind of like,
Let him know,
like,
so
we can take this wherever we got to take it type of deal. So, but it was good to laugh about that with Micah. And it's crazy that, certain things catch on. I would have never thought that story would have, caught on and resonated with fans as much as it did. And it's just kind of cool to look back and laugh at those situations that, you kind of took a little bit more
but it
seriously.
It shows grit and also shows on the plate,
you're not going back down.
No, and this is also why you played in the Premier League. Because you're tough.
Wanted that challenge.
Yes, exactly.
Test yourself against
the
best.
You like having people with that kind of attitude in your kitchen,
yes,
though?
Yes, absolutely.
You do.
Now, you go to battle, and opening a restaurant is one of the hardest things you can do, right? You put all this money into something, you build a team.
What's the success rate? You have to, not many people make it past 5 years in a restaurant, right?
Is that true?
Yeah, it's very difficult. So to do it, and then the reviewers come, whether it's, newspapers, bloggers, or just,
Critics,
right? So you are exposed, and you're thinking about this all the time. And that mentality, that attitude, I'm like, we're not going to give up. You have no idea what I had to go through. So I can relate to that. And I just think it's a strong message that I think a lot of people, because it talks about dreams, it talks about commitments. There's so much in there, and you can kind of, I can relate to that.
What are the rules around phones, cell phones, while you cook in the kitchen?
You know, like.
If someone had their cell phone, what would you say to them? Would you say,
it wouldn't
I'm going to take
they
that?
Wouldn't be there. It's nothing.
Because then that chef might clap back at you and say, I'd like to see you try.
But like, it's never gonna.
Because if you want somebody with the clip mentality, you be careful.
He's trying to bring up a story.
Hey, careful what you ask for.
This guy, he's kind of subtly trying to. He's trying to sneak diss me,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to have your phones around the team.
No, you're not.
My wife was pregnant at the time.
Okay, that's a different.
And it was like our third kid.
Yeah.
So it was like. Family is the most important thing, yeah. right? And it was like a coach trying to implement the rules at the same time.
It's
like,
family
comes first to me. Yeah. So he's trying to sneak
this. Oh, my God.
He talked about how he wasn't in the kitchen. But at the same time, if I had a good enough reason, like my wife's pregnant, you might let that slide.
But
if I'm like Charlie, Instagram straight flexing, with my profile, my story, you gotta go home, bro.
Yeah, I see
right?
that,
see, now that's
not a sneak.
You're right.
Trying to
sneak there.
When you were doing it.
But Marcus, he's forgetting the main thing because he came on the bus.
He looks around, he goes,
why don't you tell a story to him?
Where's my phone? You see my phone? And he's saying it loud.
No, but he's been saying it the whole time before we even got on the bus. He's checking everyone.
Yeah.
He can't, Mo, you see my phone? I said,
hey,
nah.
And he said it loud, so even the coaches, hey, who see my phone?
Yeah.
But in that tone, like, I'm going to fight you. And then the coach comes and he's like, I got something like this. Yeah. And he's still doing the, hey, you see my phone?
Yeah.
And then that's when he said, you better give that back.
Yeah.
No, his exact words were, because he dangled the phone in front of him, and Clint went to reach for it, and he pulled it back. So that took Clint
coach,
to a...
Coach had no chance.
Coach had banter. I'll tell you what. Coach had banter. That took Clint to another level.
You know, like that commercial where the guy has the dollar on the rod and reel? That's kind of how I felt he did. But he was like, ooh, ooh.
Is Coach still in the game? This is why he retired.
I think he retired.
No, but I get it. That's a very special moment.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, for sure.
What was your favorite era of Arsenal?
Oh, Wenger, like with the Invincible.
The Invincibles, the 2000s?
Oh. Yeah, that's incredible. Like, because it was such a new way for the Premier League also to, like, with Mourinho and Wenger, it introduced, it's always been Fergaland, right? And then these guys come around and just changes everything.
Mm.
Like, looking at Arsenal from, like, you know, laterals, like they didn't even have that before. It's like fullbacks running up and down, up and down. England never played like that. With midfielders like Cesc and like they could hold the ball and really
change the game.
Yeah, but in England also, it's still people like Vieira, that's like, it's still rough. And then it's still, you have someone like Cesc that's like slows everything down and obviously that's a different
vision.
All
right, time out. You mentioned all these icons, but how is Freddie Ljungberg your favorite player on this team?
Because he's Swedish! It's just a Swede. Like that, you root for
your Sweden.
I was also in awe that a Swedish person can even hang with these guys. I mean, not just hang, he played, you know, which was incredible. We've had one guy in the late 80s, early 90s that played for Liverpool, like was captain. But there's not been a lot of Swedish that actually was dominant forces in the Premier League. So that was incredible to watch him do it. And Zlatan came in an era when almost Zlatan was done, right? So yes, we didn't watch him, support him, United, but it wasn't like when he was in Milan or when he played for Inter and Milan, when everybody, like it's, you know, Zlatan transformed football in Sweden, right? Like people traveled to see Zlatan, you know.
Is he loved in Sweden?
Of course, by half of the country.
And the other half?
No, they just don't get it. Like
he rubs Zlatan the wrong
way. Represents, it's almost like, do you like Beyonce? It's beyond music. It's beyond soccer. You know,
it's like a cultural icon.
It's a culture because he comes from an immigrant background, so he represents more than sports.
Mm.
You can't look at Zlatan as a sports figure.
Gotcha.
He doesn't. It's like saying it's Nadal and Federer tennis player. Yeah, but they're like, Messi's beyond being a soccer player.
Where's Henrik Larsson in that?
every Swede loves Henrik because he was a great soccer player and stayed kind of in that pocket of being a great soccer player. Didn't really speak outside. So they love, he brought them so many great moments. But Zlatan is on a different, operates on a different level. And Henrik has put himself out there too in a very difficult thing. Like he's been a coach, which is very difficult. His son is playing at a high level. So Henrik is in a day-to-day conversation. You don't see Zlatan. Zlatan doesn't even live in Sweden, you know what I mean? But for kids of immigrant background, he's everything because he gave them identity in a way that it's hard to explain. It's beyond soccer.
Also a dream that maybe you can do that.
Exactly. And he come from a very difficult, rough background and still made it. You know, he's an investor in Hammarby now, your old club.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he's beyond. It's also too soon, right? He just stopped. So give it 10 years and Zlatan will come back a little bit more probably and do some more charitable things, hopefully. And then I think it's going to get on that more loved scene. Right now, his mentality is still a player, you know?
Have you cooked for him?
No. I met him, but I'm not in the restaurant. Out to the restaurant.
What would you want to cook for him?
Well, he comes from this Yugoslavia, so probably like from Yugoslavia, so probably cevapčiće, which is a
one. You just know food from everywhere.
I mean, that's my job. This is my.
Is it though? Do all chefs know food from everywhere?
No, I don't care about all chefs. I care about this.
Oh.
No. You have to be. I worry about this.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the only way you can stay on top.
Well, so how do you stay on top? Like, what's next for you? What are you looking to do next? Are you one of those people that's always thinking about what am I building next?
Yeah, I mean, we built something out of nothing, and the only way to stay on top of that is to work on it every day and try to figure out how do you improve, how do you get better every day. That's what we work on every day.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
How have you evolved as a chef?
Through traveling, through my staff, through my experiences, evolving as a person, having a family, but traveling, challenging myself. Like, we're just open Metropolis at the former site where 9/11 happened, right? So it's very emotional to New York and to us. But to build this restaurant in this very, very emotional place, how can you build a great experience there? We just want to become a great New York destination. And, you know, how do you evolve Red Rooster, something we've been working on for 12 years, it's been in business for 12 years, and how do you, you know, for me it's important to champion people that look like me and people who did not get chances. You know, like at Hav Mar, all our leadership team are women of color, because when I started the game, there was no position for black people in the industry, right? Although black people and people of color did a lot of the work, we didn't have access to money, we didn't have ownership. So I'm like, as a leader, you're like, I can't just sit on the side. It's like, oh, I'm gonna make sure I'm good. It doesn't work like that. You have to open up the door.
It seems like you've done a great job of picking people to, because you can't be at all these places at one time.
No.
So it seems like you've had to be a good judge of character to pick people to kind of be captains of those different locations to be so successful that you could have so many.
Yeah.
What was the trick in terms of that interview process and finding the people for the right fit?
I think it's aspire, inspire, right? You have to build a vision and a dream and aspire towards something that is larger than just this. In Harlem, the goal was to connect food, music, and culture. Our downstairs, we have our music venue. We do that. Upstairs, it's really about celebrating the African-American culture. The west side in where Hav is, art has always been in Chelsea, so how do we bring artist community in? And then we added this culture piece of we want this restaurant to be run by women of color. For me, coming out of the pandemic, that was just the right thing to do. Because looking at the industry, just like soccer, it's very, very male dominated, and the teams, and now people understand that you have to change it. And
be inclusive.
And people like yourself have been transformative in many positions in soccer and inspired other people, which is important, right? If we don't change, it's not going to happen. You have to push. You have to change.
What are you proudest of?
To been in business in New York City for 25 years, which is a very challenging thing. Uh-huh. But also that my mom saw that something that her mom, that we did at the household, just practice on food, is something that I'm 40 years later can work off, you know, and provide for my next for the next generation. So
cooking must have taken you so many incredible places,
yeah.
not just like geographically, but just in life, right?
Yeah.
If you could choose the gifting that God gave you, would it be football or would it be cooking?
To do what you guys have done, I think is the most incredible, must be the most incredible feeling. Go on the field, battle against the best in the world.
You'd be done at 30-something.
No, they're not done. They're evolving. They're evolving down the thing. Yeah,
hey, we're kicking.
Yeah. You said we cooked.
Yeah. It's just something. I mean, we just talked about it, right? You played against, you know, Messi and stuff like that. That must have been, I mean, I couldn't even talk about it. It's like hard to understand either.
Yeah, but you sat here humbly,
yeah.
like whispering Madonna.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
Oprah. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
the
list of people that you've had the pleasure to cook for is incredible. Yeah.
So you've
right?
cooked for Obama twice, though, right?
A couple of times, yeah.
So in those moments, what's that relationship like? Like, are you able to have a dialogue with him? Has that relationship grown since you've cooked for him a couple of times?
You just have to you have to be respectful of where they're at, right? They sit on information. He might have to, at any given moment, he might have to leave and actually deal with the world, right? So it's not about, it's actually been easier to deal with Michelle because she's been able to be more social than when he was the president. He's like, at 1 second, something can change, you gotta go. There's nothing to discuss, right? So you can never have that cat. You have to respect the position. I remember we did an event after he was president, and of course he was much more, he was calmer, you know? He was like just in a, he didn't wear a tie. He was more
just enjoying
it. Yeah, he was enjoying it more, and I get it, because that moment, that heartbeat, like there's so many different things going on at the same time. So for me, it's more about being super respectful of where do I need to be? It's 40 minutes, it's not 41. It's like you just have to like time everything. So it's more a job of precision and what's their next step and what is it, how can we provide? So this is truly a service, right? You just got to do that. It's not a casual interaction.
But what's the difference between that and an Oprah then?
I mean, Oprah got more ties. She got ties. She got ties. You get a Tiona. You get a Tiona. You guys don't need Tiona, but whatever. Like, you know, it's different, you know, especially if she's there with Gail, because then you know, I know Gail better, because you can hang with
her. Have you ever been hurt by somebody's reaction to your food?
Like a critic.
I get.
Oh, I just meant like anybody. Anybody person. You cook for.
I just wondered if there was like a big like critic that came and wrote an article or something. Because like, there's always people that are writing articles and talking trash about you when you're playing.
Yeah.
And you know it's the good stuff you don't really listen to is bad.
Held on to that.
What's up?
He ain't letting go.
No, I mean it's just something that comes with the job. No matter what you do, it's just part of the job, right? Yeah. And it's like motivates you. People are different to be like, all right, I'm gonna show you.
And do you pay attention to it? Like we see every article.
Right? I mean, clearly they don't pay attention to what's written about them. So it's like, you know.
What did Landon really say? No. But I mean, I think that again, I don't want to be paranoid, but so much of our cultures are put out there. A black culture is put out there against the mainstream, and we get judged by people who don't know what a jollof is, who don't know what a goose is. So if we're trying to tell our stories, it's very complicated because the majority of writers maybe know about Italian food or maybe they know about French food. And then they're going to detail talk about what we're doing. That is a very hard thing because you don't have the chance to go back and forth or give context on what you're trying to do, right?
Mm.
So everything is not about race and culture, but when you are a minority in a majority society, you never, is rarely get a chance to give context to what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in sports, it happens in music, it happens in food. So that's frustrating because when someone is judging on something that they actually don't know, you know they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, because they never played pro, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good,
exactly.
you are who you are now, right? Mm-hmm. Restaurants everywhere, as you said. If we need to travel somewhere, mm-hmm. we got a restaurant to go to. Bet. If you could look back now, because I feel like we always get asked this question. Like, if you can look back on your younger version of yourself, like your first year entering the world of being a chef, and you can give yourself advice, like, what are you saying to yourself?
I think it's probably still lingers still. It's enjoying the moments, right? When you're young and you're coming up, you're working so hard, so fast. So the first 10 years for me is just a blur, right? It was before you had, not before cell phone, but before like you had cameras on your cell phone. And I didn't take pictures of anything. So I just like, damn, I wish I had more memories. Like I have them in my head, right. But I just wish I enjoyed those moments a little bit more. And enjoying the moment and slowing down. And you know, for me, it's always been a trade-off. I did most of my work abroad, so it was hard for me to connect with my Swedish family. So they've been on my journey and mentored me and come to my places, but everything has happened, mostly has happened in America. So there's a lot of sort of pure family time that I've missed, right? And that when you get older, you think about that. Damn, I missed birthday, funerals, weddings, a lot of that stuff.
It's hard to live with your feet across two continents, right? It's really hard. Do you have a restaurant in Disney World? Because it's the only place that Mo goes outside of Las Vegas.
Soon come. No, I know, I know.
Wait, you said you got one in Vegas?
Yeah, we just have Street Bird in Vegas, but we're working on something else.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
Congratulations on all your incredible success. It's fantastic to hear about this.
Success. This was, like I said, when I saw Charlotte T, I was like, this is the show I have to be on because I love football.
We
I love soccer
you.
So much. And I have so much respect and envy of what you guys have done because that's my first love. But admiration, I just love it so much. So,
but we have a lot of respect too for the way you represent and the way you give back. It's hugely admirable. We appreciate you again.
Thank you so much
for your time.
Thank
so good to meet you.
Care for the mentions.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for the food, man. Really good.
Mr. My sweet, I do. Yeah. Appreciate
you, man.
Thank you.
Yes.
Here's a sneak peek of next week's episode of Kicking It with Andres Cantor.
Nico's engagement.
So, Friday night, after he gets engaged, I see the Instagram post of everybody that is putting pictures up, right? Of them getting engaged, her showing the ring, and this and that. So I get home, I post a picture, so proud of you, son. 10 minutes into it, I get a call. Get that photo down. Everyone else is posting your pictures. Yeah, but everyone is not you. And please see if anybody from CBS saw your story.
What? Why?
Oh, no.
Because this was going to be a surprise for, I think, the Champions League crew. What he meant, but I said, okay, I obliged. I took it down. And then I called them up the next day and I said, you know, this is going to go on my biography. My son made me take down one of my most proudest and happiest moments in my life because he had sold his exclusive to CBS or whatever.
He said, Pete, hold on. Is it all right if I can propose on this day at this time?
Oh, man. Had to get clearance first.
Oh, man.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.